So today on Sri Krishna Janmashtami, the appearance day of Lord Krishna, we're on the eighth day of the moon, on the Ashtami, the moon itself manifested as the full moon because of the influence of Lord Krishna. An auspicious nakshatra, Rohini, appeared, and all the entire atmosphere, Hare Krishna, became peaceful. Everything became, whereas previously people had lived in fear of Kamsa, whereas previously the mood was one of anxiety. Always Kamsa's soldiers could come and disturb whatever sacrifice anyone was performing. They were outright targeting the Brahminical culture and aiming at slaughtering the cows. But now, at the time of the appearance of Lord Krishna, the sacrificial fire was burning very peacefully, and thus everything just somehow or other had an atmosphere of fearlessness and very positive. People may not have known that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared, but His influence, His presence, blessed the entire world. Today I wanted to read a number of verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, from the first canto, from the prayers by Queen Kunti. So first canto, chapter 8, text 32. Kechit ahura jamjatam Punya slokasya kirtaye yado priyasyan vavaye malayasya vachananam kichit. Someone, aho, says, ajam, the unborn, jatam, being born, Punya slokasya, of the great pious king, kirtaye, for glorifying, yado, of King Yadu, priyasya, of the dear, anvavaye, in the family of malasya, Malaya Hills, Eva, as Chandanam, Sandalwood. Translation. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say that he's born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as Sandalwood appears in the Malaya Hills. I'll also read the next verses. Apare Vasudevasya Devang Devakyam Jajito Vyagat Ajastvam Asya Ksemaya Vadaya Cha Suradvisam. Others say that since both Vasudev and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. Text 34. Bharavataranayanye bhuvo nava ivo dado sedanchaburi parina jato yatma bhuvartita. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Bhavesmin klishyamananam avijjakamakarmabhi shavana smaranarhani karishyan ittikichana. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned soul suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant and repeat your transcendental activities or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. So, Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyanandana Salakya Shaksurin Militam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Nama Si Chaitanya Mano Bistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Siguro Si Yutapada Kamalam Si Gurun Vaisnavamscha Si Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sivisakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Visabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyacha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaisnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So Kunti Devi is bringing out the contrast between the Aja, or the one who is unborn, born, and the Jata, and the one who is born. How Krishna is at the same time Aja and Jata. How he is eternal, and therefore there's no question of him coming into being, which is what birth in a sense is. Right? There is no such thing, and now Krishna began to exist. Natvevaham jatunasam naham. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you. So in that way, Krishna is Aja, or the unborn, eternal. And it is said that Krishna is like the sun. Krishna Suryasa Mayahaya Andhakar. Krishna is like the sun who appears in the domain of darkness, the domain of Maya, the illusory energy, which is actually a corner of the spiritual world which has become covered as the sky may be covered by a cloud. Then Krishna somehow or other appears and takes the form of a child. Of course, it's described that in Mathura, when Vasudeva and Devaki were locked in jail by Kamsa, Kamsa came and killed all the children of Vasudeva and Devaki. And these children, naturally Devaki was very upset, you know. Then we remember that it said the eighth child will kill Kamsa. But then the eighth child turned out to be a girl. That was a surprise. But Kamsa never, of course, at first thing he thought, what can a girl do to me? Right? Like, you know, it's like, I cannot be killed by a girl. That's not possible, right? I mean, that was the first mistake. Women can be deadly, actually, at times, you know. So Kamsa didn't realize that. And then But then Kamsa had a moment of doubt and thought, anyway, let me kill her anyway. So he grabbed the little child by one leg and he threw it against the wall. But then that child transformed into Durga Devi, and she laughed and said, "Ah, Kamsa, what can you do to me? Don't you know that the child who will kill you has already appeared elsewhere in this world?" That was a bit shocking, Kamsa. And it's like, anyway, and Kamsa was sort of a devotee of Durga, and he was worshipping Durga, so that made it even more shocking. His worshipable deity appeared there. But, as we remember, Kamsa, after that, decided that the whole thing, that the whole celestial voice was false. And he was saying, I didn't know that celestial voices could lie. You know, I always thought celestial voices would always speak the truth, but just see. Even they lie. The whole thing is a hoax. I will not be killed at all. It's just, you know, it's just some false thing. Nothing to worry about. This voice may have come while I was driving the chariot of Devaki at the time of her marriage, but you know, it has no meaning. It's just another lie, like so many. Hollow phrase. It can do nothing to me, Kamsa. After all, I defeated Indra. Don't forget. You may have forgotten, but I did. I defeated Indra. Do you realize that? Yes, that's like, not only did I defeat Indra, I defeated many powerful demons as well. Yes, Agasura, he couldn't do nothing to me. I wrapped myself around his throat by grabbing, you know, by putting my whole body around his throat, and I grabbed my ankles and I pulled and he suffocated until he is begging for mercy. Okay. Then I let him live. Janakasura, I threw him away also. No problem. Yes. And I have powerful allies as well. Because, you know, Jarasandha, the emperor. Jarasandha is the emperor. He is my father-in-law. Yeah. So I have powerful allies. Huge army. Very powerful. And, you know, Jarasandha knows me. He knows my power. Because once in the army of Jarasandha, there was this elephant, Kuvalayadipa. This elephant is a monster of an elephant. And it's Mahut, it's elephant rider. He gave it alcohol to drink. And that elephant was totally wild and aggressive. A powerful male elephant. One day, this elephant came into my city, the city of Mathura. What can an elephant do to me, Kamsa? What do you think? Some insignificant creature, some elephant can do to me, Kamsa. You think an elephant can do something to me, Kamsa? An elephant can do nothing to me. I took that elephant and threw it 80 yojana. 80 yojanas. You realize what a yojana is, isn't it? Or not, You don't know. You're that ignorant that you don't know what is a yojana. 80 yojanas. Yes. Not one yojana, no. 80 yojanas, Yes, I threw that elephant. Yes. One yojana is 8 miles. You don't know what a mile is either, do you? A mile is not a kilometer. Oh no. What's a kilometer? A mile goes beyond a kilometer. Then we have different miles also. We have land miles and nautic miles and all these things, you know. Yes, you get totally confused. But I guess they were land miles. So 8 land miles
1.6 something. Yeah, you can say it exactly because he's a pilot.
So in this way, the miles, 8 miles. I'm too lazy to calculate for you how many kilometers that is, but, you know, 80 times that. He threw an elephant, Kamsa. So Kamsa was not your, you know, your kid on the block, you know. I mean, he was the heavy guy, obviously. I mean, when Kamsa came out, everyone was all right, you know, cross the street, right? One of those types, you know, like the heavy kind of types, you know. I don't know if Kamsa had tattoos and so on, but, you know, something like Hell's Angels have, which says, born to lose or something like that, right? Anyway, the Garga Samhita is the source of information about Kamsa being very strong and defeating all these demons that later on attacked Krishna. And Kamsa first defeated them, and thus they became the servants of Kamsa. And therefore, on behalf of Kamsa, they attacked Krishna. And Kamsa went to the heavenly planets, and all the demigods just ran away. I mean, no one was going to face him. No way. Indra disappeared, and therefore Kamsa didn't even have a fight. So he just, then he took the throne of Indra, and he brought that to Mathura. And for a while, Ugrasena was sitting on it, his father. But, you know, that didn't last long, because after a while, he didn't just put Vasudev and Devaki in jail. He put his father in jail as well. And then Kamsa himself sat on the throne of Indra. As was befitting, wasn't it? Was it or not? Was there anyone who dared to disagree? When Kamsa raised an eyebrow, the whole universe was shaking in fear. Kamsa. So, even in Vrindavan, everyone was afraid of cruel Kamsa. Cruel Kamsa was always on everyone's mind. Beware, watch out. Even the reason why they got Srimata Radharani married to Abhimanya, because there was a rumor that Kamsa had heard about her beauty, and they were worried. They were worried, so they thought, if we marry her off quickly, then at least socially she will be protected from that brute. Yeah, because, you know, you just don't know. He can do anything. Suddenly his soldiers can come and grab her and this, that, you know. And then there's nothing that can be done. Therefore, better marry her off quick. So the fear of Kamsa was widely spread everywhere. How come that such a father, like Ugrasena, who was a great devotee, how come that a great devotee like Ugrasena had such a son? It was difficult to understand. You think like devotee, you know, like have like, if some devotee suddenly gives birth to a child that sort of resembles Dracula and the teeth like that, we all go, but how can this happen? You know, how can you give birth to Dracula? It can happen. Yeah. You never know. You know what comes out. That you'll only find out after birth. And what do you do? So in this way, we see that Kamsa had taken his birth from Ugrasena. This is also mentioned in the Harivamsa. The Harivamsa is a supplement to the Mahabharata written by Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva is describing in the Harivamsa how once Padmavati, the wife of Ugrasena, was visiting her ancestral home, and she was from a Himalaya kingdom. So she went home, and then she was walking in the mountains on the meadows there, on the green fields and the flowers, and she had servants around her, and everything was like beautiful and romantic, something like a Bollywood movie, where you see such pictures always. And then it happened to be so that Drumila, who was a Rakshasa, was flying in the sky on some celestial chariot. And as he was flying, his eye fell upon this girl of extraordinary beauty, and, you know, he immediately felt romantic feelings, and he thought like, oh, yes, who is this girl? But as he came closer, he saw the red dot and line and so on. Anyway, that didn't stop him. He was just, but rather, he was trying to find out who her husband was. And he found out it was Ugrasena. Then moments later, Ugrasena appeared. And Padmavati was like overjoyed. Oh, you have come. He said, I couldn't bear the separation from you any longer. All the way he had come from Mathura, all the way to the Himalayas, because he couldn't bear the separation from her. She melted in moments, and the girlfriends discreetly kind of withdrew, and next moment, you know, out there in the fields, whatever happened there, happened. But she realized then that you are not Ugrasena, because his touch was different. That was not the touch of her husband. It was heavier. And she said, who are you? Then he said, I am Drumila, the Rakshasa. And then he said, you are very fortunate that you will conceive a child of me instead of an ordinary human being. And then he laughed, and he left her like that. Anyway, so there she was, you know, like with a conception, with a child from this personality, Drumila. Of course, she never told her husband these things, you know, have happened before in the history of the world, right? Before the DNA tests, all these things would happen, you know. Anyway, but Ugrasena never knew. He never found out, and just brought Kamsa up as his son. But actually, that's where Kamsa got his demoniac mentality and his extraordinary strength. That was the reason. So, it's interesting if you puzzle it all together from these various books, you know, like the Bhagavatam doesn't give you so much information about Kamsa. So, it's interesting to get a little background about Kamsa. Anyway, Krishna appeared. And Kunti Devi, she is looking at this contrast. How between Krishna's human feature and Krishna's superhuman feature. How Krishna is her nephew. And how Krishna is at the same time the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She is offering him obeisances. Nama Nabaya Pangaje. She is offering obeisances to his lotus navel. Nama Pangaja Maline. Then she's offering obeisances to the garland of lotus flowers that he's working. Nama Pangaja Netraya. Now she's offering obeisances to his lotus eyes. And then Nama Pangajangraye. At the end, she is offering obeisances to his lotus feet. And it is said, why first the navel? Shouldn't she start with the feet? See, no, but because he was her nephew, and in the external relationship, she's his auntie, so therefore she should receive obeisances from him. Wasn't appropriate externally for her to offer first to the feet. So she just started with the navel. But she completely accepted him like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She was worshipping him at all times as the Supreme Lord. And she made statements in her prayers that you are indeed the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead who is present everywhere, yet you are invisible. You are invisible. But now he was visible. And that's amazing. The invisible Lord, the Lord who is invisible, that is a fact. Naham prakasa sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is invisible. Why are we having so many religions in the world? Wars, and because the Lord is invisible. And some say, no, that's not God. No. No, God is like this. No, God is like that. Because they don't know. Because they can't see. We can't see him. That's why. Otherwise, if everyone could see, then it was simple. If everyone could see the Lord. But because avritam jnanam etena yoginam nityavairina, due to the influence of our eternal enemy, our knowledge of the truth is covered. Our eternal enemy is defined in the Bhagavad Gita. Kama is a krodha is rajaguna samutbhava. That coming from the mode of passion, there is lust. And that is our nitya vairina, our eternal enemy. So due to this nitya vairina, avritam jnanam etena yoginam nitya vairina, our knowledge has become covered by this eternal enemy, lust. And lust, it is said, indriyano mano buddhir asya adhisthanam uchate, that lust is situated in the senses, lust is situated in the mind, and lust is situated in the intelligence. And as a result, one cannot know Krishna. Due to lust, Krishna is no longer visible to us. Due to lust, we cannot appreciate. It is by mercy. By mercy only that one can come to know of Krishna. That mercy is first of all mercy of Krishna. There is so much mercy of Krishna. Krishna makes so many arrangements. There are scriptures in the world. The Vedas are emanating from the mouth of Lord Brahma. Krishna, he is empowering Lord Brahma from within the heart and revealing transcendental knowledge to him after Lord Brahma is looking for the truth. When Lord Brahma is seated on the lotus in the dark universe, he doesn't know what is the purpose of existence, but he is seeking for the purpose of existence. And he looks everywhere, and at one point he goes down the stem of the lotus, and at the bottom of the stem of the lotus, what he sees is a dark ocean. Actually, the dark ocean that he sees is a drop of water that is there in Krishna's navel. There's a little water in Krishna's navel. And that water looks to Lord Brahma, who is much bigger than we are, like an ocean, an unlimited dark ocean. So he came very close on his own by seeking for the truth to Krishna. But ultimately he could not see him. All he saw was a dark ocean. Then Lord Brahma returned to his lotus seat, sat down and meditated, and was thinking, who is the cause? What is the cause of my being here? Then he heard these syllables, ta-pa, perform tapasya. So that was mercy. The Supreme Lord took an initiative. Therefore, it begins with the Supreme Lord. Dharmam tu saksat bhagavat pranitam. Everything begins with Krishna. Aham savasya prabhavo mata savam pravartate. Everything is emanating from Krishna in the beginning. Ishvara parama Krishna satsidananda vigraha anadir adir govinda sarva karana karanam. He's anadir. He has no other origin than himself. And everything is emanating from him. He is the cause of all causes. So in this way, Krishna, janmadiyasya yatun viyat itaratas chate svabhikya swarat. He is the origin of everything. He is all-knowing. He knows everything, but he's also swarat. He's also independent, Krishna. So here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is omniscient. He is omnipotent. He is all-powerful. And he is... what is the third one? Oh God, blank. Sometimes my mind blocks lists. Yeah, omnibenevolent. Thank you. Yeah, omniscient, omnibenevolent, and omnipotent. So they say there is a contradiction between these three. They say that if he's omnibenevolent, all good, how can there be evil in the world? Yeah. But maybe he's not all powerful, and therefore evil is out of control. So maybe he's all good, but not all powerful. In that case, maybe there is evil due to this. Yes. Or maybe he's not all knowing, not omniscient, because maybe in a dark corner of the universe some evil's going on and he just doesn't know about it. Right? So therefore he is all good, he cannot be blamed. Or he is omnipotent, he is all powerful, and he's all knowing, and then he's not omnibenevolent, then he is evil. See, then God is evil, because how can this is the issue of evil, right? And there's a big problem in Christianity. They spend thousands of years trying to debate this point, because they don't see that actually the evil is not evil. It is not evil. When Krishna is punishing, he is actually benedicting 640 million people died in 18 days. I mean, that's probably the greatest slaughter that mankind has known. In the modern day, we have dramas, but nothing like 640 million in 18 days. Even the Second World War, even Rwanda, even the Black Plague in the Middle Ages didn't get to those kind of statistics. So it was a brutal slaughter, and only because Krishna wanted it. But every single personality who died there was benedicted. So whatever suffering is there in this world is a benediction. Krishna is benediction. He's benedicting. Suffering is a benediction. Yes, because it is through this suffering that we become humble. It is through this suffering that we go on our knees. It is through this suffering that we finally give up our false pride. Even Kamsa had his moment of doubt. In the Nectar of Devotion is one of my favorite passages in the Nectar of Devotion. It is described that Kamsa was seated on his throne. So many demons had already been killed. Putana, just that enormous witch. He just destroyed her when he was a baby. Sakatasura, who very, very tricky, disguised himself like a cart and tried to crush the child.
he also killed. No, really. I mean, he killed everybody. Huh. But now I'm not worried. I'm not worried because what can he do to me? I have very powerful allies. Very powerful allies. Casey. Huh. Casey, do you realize? When Casey runs around, women get miscarriages. That's Casey. Casey, who has the form of a horse. Casey, he eats human flesh, not grass. Oh, no. Not that kind of a horse. He eats human flesh, Casey. Oh, yes. Who can stand up against Casey? Then, next moment, a messenger comes into the court. Your Majesty, Your Majesty, a terrible. No. Don't tell me, No, no, no. What happened? No, don't tell me now. No, tell me. What happened? Tell me, Your Majesty. Casey, no! Your Majesty. Casey, he has killed Casey. No! Oh, God. He is too powerful. He's just too powerful. It's pointless. It's pointless. You know what I mean? I just like, I can't defeat him. What should I do? Maybe I should just surrender to him. No. How can I do that? You know, how can I surrender to me? Kamsa surrender to Krishna. What will people say? You know, Kamsa surrenders to Krishna. No. I can't do that. Okay. Then let me go to Vrindavan and inflict pain on the residents of Vrindavan. But how can I do that when I'm too afraid to go out of the palace because he can kill me any moment? So it's really nice. Kansa's moment of doubt, right? That even within the demoniac mentality of Kamsa, there was a moment where even Kamsa contemplated surrender. Because this is the nature of suffering and defeat. Krishna is Asamurdva. He has no equal. No one can stand up against Krishna. No one. No one. Therefore, he had no chance. And Kamsa for a moment realized it. For a moment he began to appreciate the power of Krishna. He's too powerful. Yes, he's omnipotent. Therefore, if Kamsa was defeated, who was able to defeat all these demons who could steal the throne of Indra, then... And if Kamsa had to bow down, then we don't have to bow down. I was in Australia one year, and I was going door to door, and with books. And I come to this house, and as I ring the doorbell opens, and this lady goes like, "Get out! Get out! Get out! Get out!" Red-haired lady, you know, like, and
get out.
Yeah. So I was sort of looking over my shoulder, if maybe behind me a dog had come into the garden, because I thought you cannot just scream to people like that you don't know, and maybe I was she didn't know why I was coming. Maybe I was coming to bring her the price of the lottery, you know what I mean, or like a check, you know, or something. So, but no, there was no dog, right? So she saw me looking, and she said, "Yes, you, get out." It's like, you know, it's like God. It's like, so I just told her, I said, "Just cool it, lady." Just cool it, okay? I'm going. Don't worry. Right? No worry. Just cool it. Right? God, you know. And I'm out on the street, And then there was a man, he had a Cadillac, a very big car with a statue on the bonnet, one of these American monster cars, right? And he was sitting on, he's like crouched down on his knees, you know, polishing the car. And when he saw me, he says, "I'll never bow down, you understand? I will never bow down, never." And I could understand he was the sweet husband of that sweet lady. They were a perfect match. There was no doubt about it. God, you know. And he says, "I'll never bow down." And it says, "Oh, yes, you will. You're bowing down to your car." You know what I mean? You have to bow down because that's your nature. Right? God, demons, you know. They were real demons, right? They didn't want to bow down. Such fools, right? Such fools. As Kamsa was being crushed. You know, no chance. You know, there are so many things one can say on Krishna's appearance day. There's really no end to Krishna's pastimes. And you can get like into great detail of how Krishna appeared and how Vasudev carried Krishna across the Yamuna. He saw this jackal walking across the Yamuna during a storm. And the Yamuna can be quite big, huh? I mean, even before the dam, and even now, I was there recently in the rainy season, the Yamuna was big. And but he saw that this jackal walked across, so he realized it's not deep. So then he walked across with Krishna, and then suddenly the Yamuna took Krishna. The waves just grabbed Krishna, and Vasudev just went mad beyond himself. And then a moment later, Yamuna Devi personally appeared with the child in her arms and said, I just had to hold him for a moment. And then she gave him back to Vasudev. Right? And Vasudev then brought the child to Mathura, to Vrindavan, from Mathura to Vrindavan. And there, in Vrindavan, it was... There, Yasoda had just given birth. And Yasoda, she had actually, as we know, given birth to a girl. Right? But not only to a girl, also to a boy. Actually, she had given birth to twins. And when Vasudev came, he exchanged Krishna for the girl. He took the girl. And then these two boys, they merged. They became one. They became one. And in this way, Vasudev Krishna from Mathura and the Krishna from Vrindavan, they became one. But they are actually two Krishnas as originally. So in this way, we find this described by the Acharyas. One book where it is described is the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. This is secret. This is for the devotee lecture in the morning. This is not for the evening lecture for the public. Then we will only tell that Krishna appeared in Mathura, in the dungeons of Kamsa, and that he appeared in a four-handed form with helmet and ornaments and everything, and that Devaki... First, Vasudev offered prayers, and Devaki offered prayers, and then Devaki, in her prayers, was afraid that Kamsa would kill him. "My dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, oh, Kamsa may kill you." I mean, something wasn't quite working due to the influence of Yoga Maya. And so then she asked if he could hide himself. So then he took the form of a child. And that's the child that Vasudev carried across the Yamuna. So all these things we can discuss on this day. And so much more.
But as we discuss the appearance of Krishna, and as we also discuss the prophecy of Kamsa being killed by Krishna, I just want to sort of include that also. Because I kind of feel if I don't, well, that's where it's all leading to, right? To that sort of moment that finally Krishna grows up and kills Kamsa, because that's the underlying theme all the time, right? All these demons come for only one reason. Krishna is going to kill Kamsa. So therefore, I feel to relieve the tension, right? The tension that has now built up, you know, Krishna is going to kill Kamsa. And is he going to do it or not? And when is he going to do it? And how is he going to do it? And of course, this is also described in many of the various literatures that deal with Krishna's appearance and pastimes. And I'm going to borrow from various scriptures. I'll first go to Mathura along with Krishna and Balaram, and I'll approach it from, well, let's first begin with Bhagavatam, the Krishna book, and there's this elephant, Kuvalyadipa, because after Kamsa had thrown that elephant away 80 yojanas, it landed there, and then Jarasandha heard about it. And then Jarasandha said, wow, who did this? That's amazing. He is a suitable groom for my daughter. Oh yes, I want such a son-in-law, you know. So in this way, Kamsa became the son-in-law, and then as a gift for the marriage, he gave him this elephant as a gift also. So the elephant was back, but this time in chains and well taken care of. So Kamsa sent this elephant after Krishna before the wrestling arena. And of course, Krishna played quite nicely with this elephant, because this elephant came storming at Krishna. And with big tusks and so on, and Krishna ducked him and ran right between his legs, came out at the back, grabbed the tail, pulled the elephant all the way back, and then Krishna again went back to the front. So then again, the elephant charged, and this time, as the elephant came storming at Krishna, Krishna stuck out his leg and tripped the elephant. Right? So, you know, this was quite something. And then, as a result, because the elephant tripped, its tusks came stuck in the ground, and then Krishna broke off these tusks, and then, you know, and then him and Balaram each carried one, and they smashed the elephant on its head with its own tusks and killed him like that. And then the mahout was also killed. And then they carried these tusks from the elephant over their shoulder as they walked into the wrestling arena. Now, there were these two wrestlers, Chanura and Mustika, and they kind of, you know, they were enormous hunks of flesh, right? As wrestlers, as professional monsters usually are, you know, genetically engineered and everything, right? Too many steroids. So these guys were just like monsters, hunks of flesh. They were close to Kamsa. Kamsa himself used to wrestle with them for sports. So they were more than just like, you know, professionally appointed wrestlers. They were actually Kamsa's close friends. You know, he would hang out with them, you know, have a drink together and all that kind of stuff, you know, as what demons do, right? Demons amongst each other kind of thing, right? So it was really, so Kamsa was a bit emotionally involved in the matter. Now, I'll jump to the Harivamsa, because the Harivamsa really, like, gets into the whole thing quite graphically. And it is described that as they're wrestling, at one point, Krishna, with two hands folded, hits, now I'm a little bit rusty, was it Mustika that he hit, or was it Chanura? I think, are you sure? Very sure? You remember it? You, huh?
Krishna and Chanura. Okay. Then it was Chanura. So he hit Chanura on the head. And as he hit him on the head, his eyes popped out of the sockets and they were dangling there. So, I mean, definitely, yeah, that was a good blow. Chanura was sort of finished after that, and Balaram didn't mess around, you know. He just finished off Mustika and so on at the same time. So, and then after that, now I jump to the Gopal Champu, you know. And then in the Gopal Champu, it is said that after that, there was another wrestling match where Krishna wrestled with the cowherd boys in the same arena. And then the cowherd boys defeated Krishna. And that was too much for Kamsa. That was the point where he lost it, you know what I mean? Like, first you kill my wrestlers, and that was already like, you know, got him boiling. And then the next thing, you know, this humiliation on top of it as well. That was just too much, too much. So then comes a call out to the royal guard, arrest this Nanda Maharaj and confiscate all his property. That was the first thing. And then, you know, he's saying, gave orders to kill Krishna. But, you know, Krishna, he wasn't interested in himself, but when Nanda Maharaj was being threatened, what could he do? So then Krishna jumped over the royal guard. And actually, all that he did, according to the Gopal Champu, was he simply knocked the crown off the head of Kamsa. Just to sort of establish that he was not the king. But as a result, as he hit off this crown, Kamsa sort of fell, and he fell from the raised platform, from the dais, and as a result, he just fell, and he was dead on the ground. So, in this way, in Gopal Champu, it almost looks like an accident. Kamsa, that Krishna didn't really kill, actually. He didn't really kill his family member. It's a vicious rumor. It's not true. It was an accident. Who says Krishna killed Kamsa? It's totally vicious, vicious, vicious. Yeah, wait a minute. But in the Bhagavatam it says that he pummeled him. That after that he sat on top of him and was just beating him with his fist, you know, like, yeah, that's true. He did that. He did that. That was only to show that he was really dead. See? So actually, you know, like, if you look at Gopal Champu, you get the real story, actually. Krishna was innocent. Yeah. Who says he killed Kamsa? So again, this celestial voice didn't speak the truth. Just see. Anyhow. Whatever, you know, sometimes it is like that in different scriptures, the same pastime is described a little different. And don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just relish it. You know, different flavors. Don't get into like, but how is this possible? In this one scripture it says, and in the other scripture it says just the opposite. So, I mean, which of the scriptures is true? I mean, I cannot accept this. This is, maybe then the whole thing is not true. And actually, maybe Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And maybe, therefore, actually, today is not Janmashtami. And therefore, I mean, there really is no reason to fast, and therefore I think it's about breakfast time, and I think we should get serious and we should just have breakfast because Krishna doesn't exist anyway. So, I mean, okay. That's also possible. But one, a devotee is not reading these kinds of apparent contradictions in that way. A devotee is rather seeing them and relishing them. And even if there are sometimes great serious contradictions, then we know that Krishna appears again and again, and one description is of one appearance, another description is of another appearance. And in this way, there's also no complication.
right? So everything is fine, you know, a little variety also is the spice of life, right? Without variety. So no, Krishna is really the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, he is. His superhuman activities are amazing. And Kunti Devi here in a series of verses is asking in a questioning way. Some say the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings. And others say that he is born to please King Yadu. So in this way, she is saying, well, some say it's this reason, some say it's another reason. And then she continues and says, others say it's because Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you and performed austerities. And then again, others say that he appeared to kill those who are envious of the demigods. The world overburdened, and Brahma, who went there to the ocean of milk and prayed along with Bhumi, went there and all the demigods followed and then telepathically received a message from Krishna that soon he would appear in the Yadu dynasty and that all the demigods would have to appear in the Yadu dynasty. So all different reasons are given. And Krishna appeared because of all of these reasons. That is the point that Kunti makes, of all of these reasons. Many reasons simultaneously caused Krishna to appear. Yes, because of Yadu. Because Yadu was such a noble personality that Krishna agreed to appear in his dynasty. Yes. Like that. Of course, you know. Because of the austerities that Vasudev and Devaki performed in a previous life. Sutapa and Prishni, it said at one point they were hanging in trees. Yeah, as part of an austerity. They were hanging in trees, you know, fasting. Yeah. So, you know, today we're fasting, but I don't think we're going to hang in trees, is it? So, therefore, we may do a little tapa, but we can understand that the name of Vasudeva in a previous life was Sutapa, right? Su is a reinforcement, right, of tapa. So, reinforced, you have reinforced concrete, and you also have reinforced austerity. So austerity has its value, because if austerity in itself is not valuable, but austerity performed for Krishna has a value because apparently it can attract Krishna. So that is there. So tapas is part of the life of a devotee. We are for Krishna. But it must be done according to time, place, and circumstance. In this day and age, the tapas must be connected to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is the Yuga Dharma. So if you want to do any tapas, you have to do it in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and give out the mercy somehow or other. That is the tapas. But still, today, we, as I said before, and I'll say it again, today we are fasting for the... But the fasting itself is not the objective. It is the hearing and chanting instead of the digesting. You know, I mean, instead of like stuffing ourselves with all the maha and then lying there with like big belly and lying... 10 minutes nap. Oops, 10 minutes of Brahma. That was 2 hours. In order to avoid that pastime today, we are fasting and we can chant, right? And be light and just stay awake. Stay awake till midnight. Of course, when Srila Prabhupada observed the first big Janmashtami in America, that was in New Vrindavan. And all the devotees came, and many sannyasis were there, and they all had their dandas, and they were all sitting in front of Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada, he started reading Sanskrit verses from the 10th canto. Because there was no Krishna book yet, nothing translated. So he was just reading the Sanskrit. So, you know, and Prabhupada said, yes, it's transcendental. Whether you understand it or not, you will be purified by this transcendental sound. And everyone was getting purified like anything, and at the same time, they began to hallucinate, and at one point, all of those dandas which were up in the air, one after the other, they all fell over, and there was, at one point, then I read that there was no one awake in the room but Prabhupada. Of course, that makes you think the whole story is not real. Because there should have been one person awake to see that Prabhupada was still awake, right? And to tell the story. Yeah? But anyway, okay. I guess as stories go and as stories are told, they gain a little bit in color and a little bit, you know, like it gets a little bigger than the real thing. But I guess most people were asleep for sure, right? On that first Janmashtami. So somehow or other, this Janmashtami, Madhavatiti Bhakti Janani, this Madhavatiti, this Titi of this particular constellation. In the beginning I referred a little bit to a particular astrological constellation which was there at the time of Krishna's appearance. Now, I'm not here as an astrologer to give you like a complete analysis of the chart that was there at the time of Krishna's appearance, but rather I'm taking the principle. The principle is that there was a particular constellation of the stars and the planets which was all auspicious. And just on this day, on this very day, at this time of the year, again, the planets are now aligning themselves, right, in a similar position. Not fully the same because of the, in Kali Yuga, things are a little bit disturbed. So, but the auspiciousness is there. The auspiciousness of Krishna's appearance is there. It is that special time. Therefore, whatever is done today carries special blessings. Whatever is done today gets special power. So in this way, today we are getting an opportunity to do something. Therefore, Janmashtami is a day to be very active. My first Janmashtami, well, it was actually my first Gaur Purnim. The first, because that was closer to when I joined. And my first Gaur Purnim was just, I couldn't figure it out. They're fasting, and at the same time, the whole day, they're busy with food. Right? I mean, this is it, you know, this is Janmashtami. We're fasting, and we're going to cook the whole day. Is it some sort of special feature of the austerity, you know, the yogi is like, you know, starving and at the same time cooking. I thought it's some sort of perverted process, something. I thought this is too much, you know, but this is what we're going to do the whole day. We're going to be cooking, and there will be just, you know, endless preparations, more than ever, and the best of the best. The mouth-watering ones, not just anything, but the goodies, you know. The whole day, That will be there. So the first time I really couldn't get it. Because it didn't register with me yet that it was about pleasing Krishna. I was thinking what was pleasing to me, and it wasn't pleasing to me, you know, to fast and cook at the same time. And I was thinking, it's not pleasing to anybody. Why would you do it that way? It doesn't make sense. But now I understand. The whole day is for pleasing Krishna. So let everybody today do something for pleasing Krishna. Something extraordinary. It is today, it is not Nitya Kriya, it is Naimitika Kriya, it is not the everyday regulated activity of devotional service. Oh no. It is the day to do something special. It is the day to go through the limits. It is the day to do what we usually cannot do. It is the day to do something extraordinary. Cook, you know, like cook and cook and cook. Or chant and chant and chant and chant. Or read and read and read the Krishna book. I mean, or just sing and sing and sing and sing until your voice is gone. Something must be done today. Something extraordinary for Krishna. And if we do so, then this Janmashtami will become one that we never forget. One Janmashtami I remember, I cooked and other devotee cooked and others also, and more devotees cooked, but this devotee was a really good cook and he sort of challenged me and I took up the challenge and he cooked 75 preps and I also cooked 75 preps, right? So that was serious. And then at the end, we served prasadam. And then we put all the preps, our 150 preps, plus other preps that other devotees made, we put them all on two plates, and then at the very end, we ate those two plates. I ate one, he ate one. And I have never in my life eaten so much, and have never in my life, suffered so much. But I survived that Janmashtami. And it was blissful. It was blissful. It was worth every moment. It was just totally transcendental. It was just amazing, amazing. Somehow or other, Janmashtami is meant for that. It is meant for doing something extraordinary. And the more we do, the more blissful this Janmashtami will be, and we'll remember this Janmashtami. We'll remember it. But not only will we remember it as something extraordinary, oh no, there is more. This Janmashtami will then permanently change us. It will actually lift us up to a higher level than where we were before. So it is a great opportunity, Janmashtami. It's actually an opportunity to go a step higher in devotional service. So let it not be a Janmashtami like so many other Janmashtami, and it's Janmashtami again, and she's like, you know, I mean, like, it's like 14 and a half hours to go, you know what I mean, to the midnight arati, and you know, okay, yeah, actually, 14 hours and 32 minutes exactly, if you want to know. Till midnight, countdown has started, you know. That's not all there's to it. If we get so absorbed in service, surely we'll become very blissful. And that will be a deep sanskara, a deep impression, which will stay with us in our spiritual life for times to come. Any questions? Any comments? Yes, sir. Hare Krishna to you too. Happy Janmashtami.
I wanted to ask, you were mentioning how Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna never leaves Vrindavan.
Hmm? Did I mention that?
No, actually, I thought you were mentioning
Vrindavanam parichaya nam apadam ekam gacchati.
So I'm wondering, sometimes they say, we say that the holy name is not different from Krishna. And also, Shishitani Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. So how to understand that if it's said that Krishna never lives in Vrindavan, that it seems that in some sense he does?
No, he doesn't. It's a false rumor. It's just gossip, you know. It's not true, and really, I mean, it's very inappropriate to say such things, and you know, really, like, you know, I mean, really not fair. Very, very, very inappropriate. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. How can you think so? You know, because, you know, do you think that when Krishna leaves the spiritual world, that when Krishna comes down to this planet, that he leaves the spiritual world and that he puts a note on the fridge and say, for Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda, have just gone to the material world, will be right back? Is that what you think? No, no. Krishna is still there in the spiritual world. And when he's also here at the same time, know one thing. When Krishna goes traveling, he's like everybody else, you know. I mean, when you travel, you want to take everything with you, including the kitchen sink and, you know, your teddy bear and all your favorite items, right? Everything. When Krishna comes to the material world, right? Krishna doesn't come with a suitcase, you know. That was a long trip, you know. Jeez. Where's the luggage, you know? And Krishna has 3 suitcases because he's the Supreme Lord. He can have extra luggage, you know, and he needs for his different peacock feathers, and he has so many outfits and all that, right? So, you know, all the jewelry, right? So Krishna comes with all his suitcases. Is that it? No. When Krishna comes, he is not limited in his luggage. Krishna takes the whole spiritual world with him. Therefore, who says that Krishna ever leaves Vrindavan? It's a vicious rumor. It's the kind of stuff you hear in the corridors, you know what I mean? Krishna takes Vrindavan with him. And Vasudev Krishna, the one from Mathura, oh, he resides eternally in Mathura, also in the spiritual world. He's also there. And he also comes to the material world. And he brings Mathura with him when he appears in the jail in Kamsa. And in this way, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, and Vasudev Krishna never leaves Mathura or Dwarka. And like that, no problem, Prabhu. Ah, Prabhu, there is no problem. Nah. Everything, no problem. Ah. All good. Krishna is all good. Ah. Jarur.